Amy Saltzman, Dr. Amy Saltzman, is a former competitive gymnast, physician, mindfulness coach, author, and victim survivor of decades of covert emotional abuse. She's also an expert on protecting children from the abuse. She's passionate about preventing abuse in sports, schools, music programs, religious settings, and community activities. And I brought her on because I'd heard about her on another podcast, and I thought it was really important for my audience, for our community, to hear about Spot a Spider. And at the end of the day, my hope is that you will go to the videos that she has, and you will watch the videos, download the free tools, and use them. In a perfect world, this will keep anything from happening. It's obviously not a perfect world, but it should make things, keep honest people honest, I guess. You know, it should be a better tool than what I've had previously, which is nothing. Just really something to help you understand what a sneaky spider is, what an obvious spider is. It gives you some of the downloads or staff screening guidelines and questions. And I really truly believe this is going to be a great resource for you. And I want you to listen to who's on the board. About 3/4 of the way through the interview, she shares with who's on her board. And I think you're going to be blown away. It's a big name. It's a really, really powerful. And if you go to the Spot a Spider website and you look at who else is on their board, it's incredible. She's really put her work into this. It was awkward for me. It was challenging for me to do the interview. I'm just not used to having this conversation, talking about these discussions. And I hope I did it justice. I'm open to feedback. Eric@specialneedsnavigator.us. For those of you that are listening for the first time, my name is Eric Jorgensen. I am the founder of True North Disability Planning. I started that company to help families, individuals, and professionals navigate the maze of benefits, resources, and services in regards to getting supports for their disabilities. I'm started this podcast to raise awareness about organizations and individuals that are supporting people with disabilities. Some of these organizations, individuals you may have heard of, but didn't really have an idea how it could be applied to your situation. And my hope is that through the interview, you'll get some different ideas, or if they still don't apply, maybe you know somebody that they will. Or maybe you've never heard of them before, but you want to check them out. In all of the podcasts, there's going to be links in the show notes for you to reach out to the organizations directly. If you want an introduction, I'm happy to do that as well. Maybe you have a podcast of your own, or you want a consult for your particular situation, and you just feel like it would be easier if I fostered an introduction. I'm happy to do that. Reach out, Eric@specialneedsnavigator.us. Let's listen in. Welcome, everyone. Today I have with me Dr. Amy Saltzman. She's done quite a few things. She's got two other companies besides the one I have her on to talk about today. She's started the Association of Mindfulness and Education back in 2005, and she started Still Quiet Place in 2001, where she talks about mindfulness. And I'll be having her back in 2023 to come on and talk about mindfulness and how that can benefit you and your children. But today, I'm bringing her on because of the company that she started called Spot a Spider. And Dr. Saltzman calls herself a survivor, which I really appreciate. I think it puts a positive spin, if you will, on coming through abuse and not being a victim and not letting it define who you are for the rest of your life. Dr. Saltzman, may I call you Amy?
Of course.
Thank you. Amy, welcome. Thank you for joining me.
I'm so happy to be here.
So let's just jump right into the deep end. The survivor. Do you mind me asking where that came from? I mean, I've never heard it before, but I really like it.
I think there is this conversation that's very interesting. And in fact, I've been having an exchange with another group of podcast hosts from A Little Bit Culty about when we use the term victim, what the benefits of using that term are, and then what kind of the possible downsides of making that your identity are. And for me, survivor doesn't quite capture the truth of where I am at the moment, or a lot of other people that I know who have really taken their experience of abuse. And as I said to Sarah and Nippy on A Little Bit Culty, they've been through the fires of hell and they've come back out carrying buckets of water for others. And to me, that is a survivor. It's not just surviving and kind of getting by day to day, but it's really making meaning out of your experience and using your experience to give back, to protect others.
I love that. You know, I've had my own experiences, my, you know, verbal, physical abuse growing up, the emotional abuse. And then I beat cancer 2 years ago. I like the idea of being a survivor from that. And, you know, being widowed 10 years ago, all of those could have made me, and, you know, and then the other one being a disabled veteran, all of them, some people may make as their identity, but I've always been hesitant to, because I believe words have power. And, you know, I don't like the term survivor. I don't like victim. It just, they have negative connotations to me.
Right. So that, but this is an interesting thing, because I just sent a note to Sarah and Nippy, because I also think it's important not to minimize a victim's experience, because it can be, I was having the conversation that it can be like a little bit of spiritual bypassing and kind of negating our humanity, and maybe even preventing really important action if we leave that piece out. And I also think that it's the person who had the experience's choice as to how they identify, just as with other identities. I think that it's really important that if someone's still in the victim space, that they get to claim that and own that, and that we don't force someone to be, I don't even want to say farther along, that we don't force someone to be other than where they are in the moment. Because I think that that's an additional cruelty.
I could see that. What does being a victim mean to you?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it means, and you could ask me next week and I might have a completely different answer, but today, it means that I have been harmed by someone, and that the person who harmed me is the person who's accountable. That's my definition today.
I like that. The person who harmed you is the person who's accountable, because I feel that all too often, the individual that was harmed feels like they're the one that's accountable, like they're at fault somehow.
Right. And that's why I don't want to remove the word victim from the lexicon. And so I think even in my bio on Spot a Spider, it says I am a victim / survivor of covert emotional abuse. And that seems to be a both and response.
And it seems to happen most frequently. I don't have the numbers in front of me or anything, but anecdotally, I think it happens most frequently by those that are closest to you, right? I mean, it could be a coach. I mean, that's most of your experience.
I mean, usually, I mean, there are victims of other things, right? Mm-hmm. Natural disasters. I think rape is a completely different category, but ongoing abuse tends to be by someone we know and trust.
And that's why I wanted to have you on, because I'm a parent. My son's 23. I'm his legal guardian. And, you know, it's something that's on my mind. He does have words. He does know how to communicate. He does know how to communicate. He's a very good self-advocate. Doesn't mean I don't worry about him when I'm gone. And I think there's other parents out there who maybe their child uses assistive technology or American Sign Language or doesn't communicate at all. How do they know when they're not around what's happening, and how can they tell if something is happening? And that, I mean, some of it's going to be, maybe you can't, but I brought you on because you're Spot a Spider. When you talk about, you know, you have the sneaky spider and the obvious spider, and you go into that, and you have videos for that. You've done the work.
I have done the work. So when we were talking earlier, I said, I wasn't sure what to do about for non-verbal people. And I think in this moment, my answer is that probably requires like nanny cams and things like that. And I'm certainly not the expert in that, but that's my thought after our conversation where I said I wasn't sure what to do. For verbal people, and for, you know, even if they're communicating by a device, then I think it's very important that they understand both the behaviors of covert emotional abuse. And we usually call covert emotional abuse grooming. And when we call it grooming, the thing that we miss is that even if it does not lead to physical or sexual abuse, it is still abuse. And actually, there's data to suggest that the psychological consequences of covert emotional abuse are worse than physical or sexual abuse or overt emotional abuse, because it's sneaky, because it's subtle, because the person doesn't know for sure, like, is this abuse? And so people who have been covertly emotionally abused are more likely to dissociate and more likely to have PTSD than those who have been abused in a more obvious way. So we want to explain terms that they can understand, at least enough to say to someone that they trust, I think my coach, teacher, aide, scoutmaster, priest might be a sneaky spider. That's all they need to say. That's all your son would need to say to you for you to be ready to ask more questions and to respond. Then in turn, now we're getting to vocabulary. In terms of the obvious abuse, we want to make clear what is obvious verbal and emotional abuse, what is obvious physical abuse, and what is obvious sexual abuse. And again, you and I were talking before the show. As a physician, I feel it's very, very important for people to have the correct vocabulary for sexual body parts. And if someone can say hands or mouth, then they can say breast, vagina, penis, anus, and buttocks. And the data shows that when we have the correct terminology, so either the correct words that we can speak or the correct words that we can use in our assistive device, then we are much less likely to be abused.
Thank you.
And you had made some really good points that I'm going to let you make yourself about this when we were talking before.
Well, yeah, and I'll get to that, but I want to thank you for saying that. And I want to pull the thread a little bit more, because I can hear people saying, well, my child is, you know, intellectually, emotionally, you know, not the same age as their biological age. So maybe they're 22, but emotionally they're only 5 or 6. Should we still be using like buttocks, anus, vagina? When should we be teaching them those words?
From the beginning, really. The data is that the, you know, kids or people of a kid-like developmental age who know the proper terminology are much less likely to be abused. And I actually think for your listenership, it's perhaps even more important to use the correct terminology, because, again, the research shows that people with disabilities and differences, people of color, and LGBTQ people are even more likely to be abused than the baseline population.
Yeah, I've seen the same research, and I personally think a lot of that's because the abuser feels more confident it's not going to get reported, or, you know, the person who's being abused may not feel that they're going to get taken seriously. Or in the case of the people with disabilities, do they even have the ability to communicate what's going on? Are those words in their devices? You know, do they have the word vagina, penis? You know, is that in their device, or did somebody leave it out? Not, I think, out of any malicious intent, but more of this almost naivety of, well, why would they need that?
Right. I think that that is definitely true. And not only do they need the words in their vocabulary and loaded into their devices, but they also need to know really what they mean and where anatomically those body parts are. So on the Spot a Spider resources, I have two images and a parent can choose. I would actually prefer for people to use the nude anatomically correct image, but there's also a G-rated bathing suit image so that people actually not only know the words, but again, know the locations of these body parts.
I like that. I think there's value in the nudes in that you're not, again, I don't know that I have the right words, but you're not making it anything to be ashamed of, you know?
Yeah. It's a body part. If your kid can say arm, then they should be able to say breast or penis.
Yeah.
And the more natural we make it, the easier it's going to be for them to let you know something happened, right? If your child was injured and banged their elbow into something, they would tell you and it'd be no big deal.
Yeah. And it also carries over for, you know, if there's not just abuse, but if there's anything else that's going on that they're bothered, they can tell you specifically, or they can talk, you know, because doctors don't know, you know, doctors aren't using cute little nicknames. I mean, you know, if you're talking to the doctor, especially if you have a young lady who's starting to see an OBGYN, you need to be able to have an adult conversation. Well, within reason based on the capability, but I think you know where I'm trying to go with that.
Right. And I'm going to give the counter example, which is that I borrowed from a training from an organization called From Darkness to Light, which is also an abuse prevention program. And one of their modules talks about a little girl who said, "Grandpa ate my cookie." Well,
oh, wow.
The cookie was not a cookie. And then the whole conversation, there's a big red flag there that a parent's not even aware of because of the very sneaky, spidery vocabulary that the grandfather chose to use.
Yeah, that's evil. Just evil.
Right. Wow. But I think, you know, we had said there might be some tough moments in this conversation, and that was probably one of them. But I think that it makes the point very poignantly about why we need to be using proper terminology.
Absolutely. And I want to also touch on and make sure people know that you have a lot of free resources on your website. You know, I was looking at, so I've been devouring your stuff since I heard you on the podcast, because I can't find anybody else doing anything like this. I just can't.
I think that it's unique because most of the educational materials are directed at adults, and that's really, really important, as is changing policies and procedures and local, national, and international laws. All of that's super important, but no one is speaking directly to children or people who developmentally are childlike.
Right. Right. And it's the other thing, you know, that got me thinking about is, I think sometimes as parents, we may be quick to brush something off. We may be quick to, I don't want to say discount, but maybe not follow it up, especially when we're talking about family members. You know what I mean?
Right.
Again, I'm struggling with the word.
I think there's a couple things that you're pointing to. So maybe I can help you out. One is, I think most of us are trusting.
Yes.
I think part of my difficulty was I was trusting to the point of being naive and maybe in denial. We don't want to believe that someone in our inner circle would harm our loved one. And at the same time, I also feel we don't want to go too far the other way and be hyper vigilant and paranoid. And so really what I'm trying to offer is this middle place of, I think I would call it healthy suspicion or something like that. So that if your child comes to you and says something the odds that it's worse than what they're saying are high. Yeah. So you don't want to dismiss it. And we dismiss it because we feel awkward about talking about it and because we want to believe the best in people and probably because we don't know what to do. And Spot a Spider is meant to address all those issues.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty apparent I'm awkward talking about it, right? And this is just for a podcast interview, and I'm struggling. I mean,
but so. One of the things I want to say is, as awkward as maybe you might imagine watching Spot a Spider and talking about it with your loved ones is, I promise you, it is way, way better than having a conversation after an abusive event.
Yes. Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, you've referenced in probably your website or somewhere, that one of the other interviews I had on with a therapist or a psychiatrist, she was saying, you know, we don't have secrets, you know, because that's a way to go back to what you had started the interview with about grooming. Secrets are a good way to, not the best choice of words, but they're a way to, that abusers may start the grooming is, let's keep this a secret from mom and dad, or, you know, whatever.
Right. Secrets are a red flag.
And so let's shift a little bit into preventative mode. You know, you have one of your free downloads was a staff screening guidelines and questions. And I really, really liked it. And we were talking before I hit record that although a lot of what you do is, you know, when you read it, it seems like it's for athletes. It's really, it can be applied anywhere. It can be applied to anyone.
Yeah, for sure. So although the videos and the resources are written in athlete, coach, club, team language, it applies to schools, it applies to religious institutions, it applies to community activities. If you look at adults, it applies to relationships and workplace interactions. Really, it applies to everything, but to cover all of that would have been too much. So what I chose to do was just to focus on the coach-athlete relationship. And at the beginning of each video, I make it clear you could have a spider teacher, music teacher, theater director, Boy Scout leader, family member, aide. And so, you know, the points and the patterns that the spiders weave are the same regardless of their setting.
Yeah. And I just thought it was important to highlight that because I'm literal. So I tend to take things very literally. I'm sure at least one of my listeners out there is literal like I am. At least I hope so. But I bring it up because many of us are doing self-directed or self-guided or whatever it's called in your state, where they have money from Medicaid, and that money, that budget is to hire staff. Well, some of us have never hired staff before. So now not only do we have to figure out, is this person going to be a good staff member, but hopefully after this interview, you'll be more cognizant of, you know, other things to be thinking about. You know, just because somebody's been working in the industry for years doesn't mean they're not a predator. Or a spider, to use your terms.
Right. Yeah. And I just wanted to give people, in the hiring and screening questions, I wanted to give people some questions to ask potential employees and a way to listen to their responses so that you might pull out red flags. And I think the questions, along with the conduct agreement, which I'm sure could be adapted for an employment contract for an aide, I think if you ask those questions and you ask the person to sign the conduct agreement, if someone's a predator, they're going to go, this family knows what's up and I'm not going to be able to weave my web in this environment. Unfortunately, that probably means they're going to go somewhere else, but it won't be your home.
Right. Is there, and the answer may be no, is there anything you can do if you have suspicions, but you don't have any hard facts, any proof?
Again, I think it depends on the abilities of the person being cared for. I mean, if you have a verbal person, then I would start with, honestly, I would start with watching the videos and using the discussion questions. That's what they're made for. If you, and again, I think if you have a nonverbal person, then you're on the nanny cam system. But I think the videos help you know what to look for so that your what you think are suspicions and aren't facts actually become facts. Or you realize that the behavior is okay. But I would say more than anything, if you're having suspicions, you need to trust your instincts and do whatever you can to get more information. And I think the easiest way to do that is with the videos so that your loved one doesn't feel like somehow it's their fault. This goes back to like why there's power in using the word victim. It's like these behaviors are not okay. You didn't do anything to invite these behaviors. And it's really important that I know if these things are happening to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing I'm talking only for myself. I worry that if I did find out something, you know, so I'm like a 0 to 200 miles an hour guy, right? There's very little in between. So I think doing the videos and making sure I know about this stuff ahead of time, I think it would help me throttle a little bit so that reaction that they see, they don't internalize as, oh, dad's upset with me.
Right.
You know, because it's not. I'm upset at the situation.
Right.
But if you have somebody with limited processing capability, they may not be able to differentiate.
Right. And I think, again, the whole intention of Spot a Spider is to prevent an incident right. from ever happening in the first place. But if it does, as you're pointing out, and this is more of a mindfulness conversation, you want to be able to breathe and let that wave of rage and grief and whatever pass, and then respond to your loved one in the most compassionate way possible, because they're already dealing with being abused and we don't want to compound that somehow.
Right. And which is why I'm going to have you back for the mindfulness, because there's so many things, you know, again, speaking for myself, 20 years in military, submarines for 15 of those years, mindfulness and who saw, yeah, not so much.
Well, it's interesting because now there's actually a big yeah. movement to do mindfulness in the military, both pre and post deployment. So we've made some progress there.
Yeah, I can definitely see the benefit when you're coming back and you're trying to decompress and reintegrate. Yes, I'm glad you're doing that.
No, not me, but some dear friends and colleagues.
Those of them who are not right. us. So you mentioned a couple organizations. I want to make sure I caught them so I can put it in my show notes. From Darkness to Light is another organization that you like what they do, or?
Well, I do like what they do, and I feel like they're not doing enough that's directly oriented to children. Like okay. when I did this, I went out to see like who's really speaking and teaching children directly. And so far, I haven't found anyone. If one of your listeners knows of someone who's doing it and doing it well, I'd love to be informed, but I haven't found it yet.
I haven't either. And my goal is to raise awareness as many resources as possible out there, because I don't know what's going to resonate with somebody. You know, I just want to make sure people know. And then A Little Bit Culty was a podcast?
Yes, it's a podcast. And really the behaviors of a sneaky spider are also the behaviors of a cult leader.
Oh.
And so the two hosts are survivors of the Nixium, or thrivers, I would say, of the Nixium cult. And they are now interviewing other survivors, therapists, and other cult specialists.
Wow.
And part of how I describe the patterns, especially of a sneaky spider, is what cult leaders do to cult members.
Wow. So that, so people could watch your videos, and even if they don't have a child with a disability, or I feel like you could also know if you're, it would give you a warning if you're in a negative relationship where somebody's gaslighting you, or things like that, right? And I'm thinking
right
to how it COVID
goes over,
was.
And... It goes over grooming. It goes over gaslighting. It goes over. I'll just highlight the kind of seven phases or seven patterns of a sneaky spider. So there's making you feel special, which includes love bombing, which can be little things, even compliments, treats, a coach offering to give your child extra time or a ride home, or, an aide might say, oh, I'd really love to take your child to the movies. Now, in many, many cases, that might be totally fine. However, if you're seeing any of the other patterns, probably not. And so it's this tricky thing of being able to discern. If I'm trying to translate from coach and athlete into like aide and child.
And I might be able to help you with that. If you say coach,
okay.
I might be
but
able to
if,
use it.
If the aide thinks that you or your child might be suspecting that they're a spider, usually the first thing a sneaky spider will do is get even more charming. They'll say, oh, you can trust me. There's no reason to be nervous. This is what all good aides do. And then that leaves you and your child thinking, well, it doesn't feel right, but the aide says it's okay. And now I'm not really sure. If you and your child then push back, then the aide may start to bully the child and say, if you tell your dad, I'm going to, I don't know what a good threat would be, but, take away your screen time, or, it's just, they start to threaten the child. And the other thing they do is they try to separate people. So you were mentioning secrets, they'll have secrets, or they'll say, don't tell your dad about this, or, your teacher raised concerns, but your teacher doesn't really know what your issues are, and I'm the only one who can help you. And they start playing on your fears. And then the other thing is they'll kind of brag and then be humble. So they'll be like, oh, I'm such a great aide, and my last family loved me so much, and you guys don't realize how good I am, and you're going to have trouble finding someone else. Yep. And then they'll deny and pretend like all abusers, I didn't say that, I didn't do that, you're not remembering correctly, that's not what happened. And if they're really, really cruel and sneaky, they may get your child to lie to you about the aide or about the child themselves. Like if something gets broken, the child may, the aide may tell your child, oh, you have to say that it was your fault, when really it was the aide's fault, or the child was pushing them away because something didn't feel right, and that's how it got broken. But the story's not going to come out that way with a sneaky spider.
And for families that have children on the spectrum, if your child has a meltdown because they don't know how to respond to something, I could see where the aide or the individual, the staff member, could play it off like, oh, well, you know how your child is.
Right.
I definitely think the videos are going to be a huge help to families. I really like your downloadable content too, your conduct agreement, your staff screening guidelines. I really love those. And again, I'm putting a disclaimer in there. I know it says coach, athlete, one line it. It'll work for you, I promise.
Right. And that's the intention, is that it's applicable in all settings.
I'm blown away. And we didn't touch on it, but if you guys listening, when you go to the Spotted Spider website, look at who Amy has for her advisors. It's not just Amy by herself. Amy, do you want to give a quick shout out?
Oh, I have to give a shout out to Judge Rosemarie Aquilina, who, as most people know, was the judge in the Larry Nassar case. And I have been so gratefully stunned at her support, because I thought if she would be on my advisory board, that would be a huge gift, and it is. However, she has not declined a single interview or podcast request. And so I would say almost half of my podcasts I have done with her, and she's been honestly more promotional of Spot a Spider than I have. And she understands the issues because she sees them every day in her courtroom. And yes, the Nassar case was the case that got the most attention, but you know, she sees cases of child abuse in a home by a employee or a family member or whatever. And I mean, she's really seen it all.
Yeah. And I'm going to include a link to the interview that you did with Annette Hines, because I,
oh, right.
That was where I heard about you. So, you know, you and Judge were on there and talking. You didn't cover the same stuff we did here. So I'm not worried, you know, and I think it'll be a really good taste for just how, I mean, you're right. She's amazing with the support, and, you know, it's so, again, it's not Amy doing this by herself. it's an incredible, I think it's an incredible service, and I want to help get the word out there. If you're a provider agency, I think this is a good thing to teach your to get for your supervisors, especially if you're going to be hiring staff. I think it's a good thing for your staff to see, because oftentimes staff may see things that other staff are doing. You know, so I'm putting a plug out there, because I think,
right. Well, and I think it's interesting, because one of the other things that conversations that I'm having that just are in progress is, I think if as an agency, if you said we are implementing all these things, then you are limiting your liability. And so one of the conversations I'm having is actually with insurers. And it, wow. The analogy that a friend made for me was, it's like if you have a swimming pool and you have an alarm on your door and a cover on your pool and a fenced in area, then you as the homeowner have done everything you can to prevent drowning in your pool. And if you as an agency commit to following the procedures of Spot a Spider, then you have gone above and beyond in trying to keep your clients safe. And so I do think that there are, A, you're doing the right thing, and B, you're limiting your liability.
I like that. I'm glad to hear you're talking to insurers, because the swimming pool analogy makes perfect sense, right? I mean, you can't control somebody jumping the fence, you know, getting into your pool. But if you didn't have the fence, you know, there's an easier argument of, well, you could have slowed them down or whatever.
Right. So it's like, are you willing to go above and beyond the industry standard and commit to the following principles? And if I was in charge of the world, people serving children would commit to all the policies and procedures in the policies and procedures document on the website.
Instead of just a background check. And
right.
And if they wanted to, could they reach out to you and work with you directly?
Oh, absolutely.
And what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Either through the website, www.spotaspider.com, or my direct email is dr for doctor, dramy, so it looks like drammy, @spotaspider.com.
And I'll include these in the show notes. But I again, no matter where you are in the country, if you're listening to this, please reach out to Amy and see what you guys can do for your agencies. And if you're a parent who's doing self-directed, get the videos. The videos are going to be a game changer. But, you know, Amy, is there anything I should have asked that I didn't ask? Anything we should have talked about?
I think the only other thing that I want to say is, if you spot a spider, then it's also your responsibility to name the spider, you know, report them to the agency, report them to local law enforcement. Perhaps when you're ready, share your story in the media, because that, one, protects others, and two, it can be super empowering to kind of take back your voice.
And that's that. That's where that Sir Thriver comes in, right?
Exactly.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. This has been a great interview. I I've got two pages of notes, as is normal. I take a lot of notes, but thank you for bearing with me. This was uncomfortable for me. I'm not sure what to ask. I'm trying to do it justice. You know, I think I have the same fears many parents have, and I just really appreciate this conversation.
Right. And I'll just reiterate that I understand that this feels awkward and daunting for many people. And I've done my absolute best to make it as easy, as accessible, and as approachable as possible. Each of the videos has discussion questions so that you can sit down with your child and walk through the questions. And you don't need to stick to the questions, but it just means you're not having to generate them off the top of your head. And, you know, most of the questions are open-ended, and a few are very specific intentionally.
That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're really welcome.
So I think it was probably pretty apparent how awkward I was feeling in some of those parts of that conversation. I'm glad I had this conversation with Amy, though. I don't know anybody else in the country who's doing this kind of work. I would argue I don't know anybody in the world either, because when I was looking for resources for this podcast, for this particular episode, I couldn't find any. It was really, really hard. I have two other interviews I did for this series, this mini series. One with to talk about AAC, and the other one to talk about with a therapist. And I hope you listen to both of those as well. You know, this mini series was a listener request about how to prevent abuse. I hope I did it justice. It's a hard topic. It's not a topic I'm super familiar with. It is something I think about a lot. Well, maybe not a lot, but I have concerns around, especially when I think about people working with my son. And I hope I did justice for those of you out there that are worried about the same things that I am, or maybe you've experienced it and you're a survivor yourself, or you're still a survivor. I just hope I did it justice for you. I'm always open to feedback, erica@specialneedsnavigator.us. If there's other episodes or other topics you want covered, please reach out to me. Let me know what you'd like to see. Until next time.